Hello and welcome to episode 20, yes, 20 of the Match of the Week podcast here, pardon me, on the Place to Be Nation podcast network. I'm Tim, and with me for all 20 episodes, including today's, is Tanner. Tanner, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. It's hot, even at late of night as we're recording this. It's still like 85 degrees here. So,
correct.
It's been a lot of fun.
I definitely do not miss that about the South. I was in Tennessee, of course, for the SCI in August. I guess I will say August. Yeah, last month, because by the time this comes out, it will have been last month. And yeah, that's why I don't like the South in August, because it's hot even at nighttime, man. What the hell? Yeah,
it doesn't get cool here till about 2 a.m. in October, so watch out for that. But when it comes, it's here to stay.
Exactly. Yeah, that being said, please go to SCI if you can. It's fun. It's great. You get to hang out with wrestling folks, and you get to eat good food, and possibly imbibe in alcoholic beverages if that's your thing too. So a lot
go
of good
watch
stuff.
It on powerbomb.tv.
Please do. Night two is insane. You want to watch night one, but night two is insane. Absolutely insane. So definitely cheap plug. So there you go, Dylan. Hope you're listening. So this is Tanner. You've wanted to talk about this match for a little bit. I'm glad, because there's a few things we align on. A lot of things we align on: the greatness of Akira Taue. We align on the Lucha Libre, like, big time mask versus mask matches. We align on a lot of things, but we also align on one Jun Akiyama, and the match we're talking about today, one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Jun Akiyama performances. And it's the finals of the 2003 G1 Climax against Hiroshi Tenzan. And man, I just, set the stage for it, because you went through, we've both seen the entirety of this tournament, but you recently decided to dig in and watch this entire thing from start to finish. Like, talk about what this tournament meant and what Akiyama's involvement was like, because him being a part of this tournament really, I think, revitalized it and started kind of the trend towards the G1 becoming what I think a lot of people celebrated as today.
Oh, for sure. So Akiyama's involvement with this G1 comes from, he gets absolutely embarrassed by Yuji Nagata in Noah a couple of months prior. So like, he essentially enters the G1 to like get revenge against New Japan. And it just starts this really interesting story of like, oh, there's like a top tier, outside name in this tournament, which is really like in the modern era hadn't really, especially with other Japanese promotions. Like, this is, there's probably two wrestlers in the world they could have got bigger than Akiyama, or in Japan bigger than Akiyama at this time, and it would have been Misawa or Kobashi. So right. The fact that Akiyama's in it, is in this block, he kind of runs rampant. Him and Tenzan actually have a match the opening night of the G1, a week prior, because in the olden days, the G1 only ran like a week, but they would wrestle
10 nights.
Yeah. Right. And they wrestled, and Akiyama just wipes the floor with Tenzan, which immediately puts him on like, oh, like, I have to win out or else I'm screwed. So it sets up this really interesting dynamic of Akiyama like going through everything New Japan can throw at him. He even beats Nagata in the semifinals. So it really sets the stage for a really fun G1 final.
Yeah, and New Japan in 2003 had done the changeover. Antonio Inoki was no longer in charge, and it was very much he was at least trying to cede some responsibility to Simon, his son. That turned out great. But this particular tournament, to get to this match, it's not just the story of Akiyama, but it's also the story of Tenzan, like you talked about. He starts out throwing an offer up. He barely escapes with his first win. And then from there, he starts to use this move that he picked up on Excursion, the Anaconda Vice. And that becomes, and this is a trope that had been used in Japanese wrestling tournaments for decades, or two decades at least. And basically it is, somebody developed a move that they thought could be the thing that allowed them to move forward and take down some of the bigger, bigger names that stood in their way. And he had this really impassioned run to get to the tiebreaker, just like Akiyama and Nagata had their tiebreaker in the Block A. He had the Block B tiebreaker against Yoshihiro Takayama, who was, outside of maybe Kento Kobashi, the top guy in Japan, and had just run roughshod over New Japan, right? And all of a sudden, it's Tenzan's opportunity to show that he is worth being in the same ring as either the top, young guy, Noah, or the guy who is about to set the record for the most title defenses for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And as much as we love Akiyama, Tenzan's story coming into this, basically using that Anaconda device as a way to set folks down and see if it's going to be the thing that carries him to a tournament victory, is a really neat piece of booking, and something that I think gets lost in a lot of modern booking when it comes to tournaments.
Exactly. And the fact, something else I read, because I read a bunch of stuff regarding the 2003 G1 as I was watching, because obviously I wasn't watching wrestling in 2003. But Tenzan had also, on excursion, had gained like 15 pounds of muscle. So he's coming in like bulkier than ever. So he's like, it's like a new and improved strong Tenzan. He's got the Anaconda Vice in his arsenal now. So it's like really important to Tenzan to win this, because obviously he'd been in G1s before. He has challenged for the championship before, but has failed, every single time, whatever. But so it's like important for the career of Tenzan to win the whole G1, not even just do well. Like, the goal here is for him to win it.
Right. The other thing too is, he's a protege of Masachono, who has won the most G1 climaxes of all time. He'd kind of, for basically the entirety of Tenzan's career, had kind of taken him as a mentor ever since he, debuted back in 1995. And, Chono had won it the year before in a very, very, incredible piece of storytelling, how he somehow was able to figure out a way to take down Takayama when Takayama was just killing everybody. And so the idea here with Tenzan is, can he, just like his mentor did the year before, figure out a way to win this thing? And it sets up this final that, first off, if you had watched all the matches leading up to this, there was no crowd hotter than this final. This crowd is freaking molten, egregiously molten. And they're all for Tenzan because, of course, the hometown guy against the outsider, right? Like, it's a perfect piece of booking. And they really do milk it in the early parts of the match and really set it up for ends up being one of the best G1 finals of all time.
Oh, yeah. Like, they start the match with, like, the most ferocious lockup I've ever seen in a match.
Oh, God, yes.
Ever. It's just like, I can't even, words can't even do it justice, but the lockup is so fierce. It's like something you would see, I don't want to say shoot style, because there wasn't a ton of, just standing collar and elbows and, like, shoot style stuff, but it had, like, the ferociousness of a shoot style thing, where they're like, oh, shit, they're really about to kill each other. They hate each other. This is real, whatever. And it, like, from the word go, this crowd is just like absolutely, and they never calm down either. Like, even during the lulls in the match, they're still like on their feet, chanting Tenzan. And it makes for a really cool environment. Like, Japan still has, incredibly hot crowds, don't get me wrong, but this crowd and like the way it's shot and the way like this is presented as like, it's storytelling 101. Like, you have the outsider, the huge heel, like Akiyama's been disrespecting New Japan his whole run in the G1. And then you have like hometown hero boy Tenzan here defending the honor of New Japan. It's a great piece of storytelling that's super simple, but also super effective.
Yeah. And the other thing too is the way, Akiyama had just, had just kind of, like you said, he ran through his side of the block. He had some incredible match. Like, he had the first Tenzan match, which was a good match, but then he went on to have the match we actually thought about doing for this, considering we wanted to do a 2003 G1 climax related show, was the Nishimura match, which is like, my God, that match is still one of my favorite matches of all time. I will ride and die for that match. That match is
incredible.
I love that match.
Absolutely incredible.
And then you had the really awesome showcase match with Hiroshi Tanahashi. Very young Tatsumi Fujinami disciple. All the dragon suplexes all the time, Hiroshi Tanahashi. And that was kind of a way different match than Akiyama you would think would have with a guy like Tanahashi, considering how he had run through the tournament. And so there was this kind of idea, it's like, okay, well, obviously him versus Nagata, that's a thing if it happens again. But on the other side of the bracket, is it going to be him versus Takayama? Essentially a double outsider final, which would be just insane. And so, yeah. The other thing, too, is that Akiyama heals it up in this match. Kind of he subtly does it. Like, he's not, he had been doing it kind of throughout the tournament. He had been very much an outgoing, very much showing a bravado. Like, he's better than anybody New Japan could put in front of him. But, absolutely. It really pays off in this match because him thinking, I'm definitely better than Tenzan, I'm definitely better than Tenzan. But Tenzan doing things that Akiyama is not expecting, and it builds and it builds and it builds to the finish. And the layout for this match, it is very much a King's Road Noah style match in the middle of a New Japan ring. And that's what I think really appealed to me at the time, because I wasn't a huge New Japan style guy at the time, but man, like, watching it back, it is truly a kind of a spectacle of a match to see that type of match happen in a G1 final like this.
Yeah, it's probably because at the time, and a couple years after this, New Japan is definitely a big fan of the sprint. Obviously, they bring in guys like Bob Sapp and Fujita in, and guys of that Murakami and guys like that, where they work sort of shorter style matches. So this match is like an epic,
right?
And like one of the few epics from this, 4, 5, 6 year span in New Japan where they just weren't having many matches of that length. I say that, and then, 3 weeks later, Takayama and Chono go 38 minutes inside a cage, but whatever.
Right, yeah.
which again is also a great match people should seek out. But, so it's just a different, it's something different. It feels like a Noah match, like a 2003 Noah match inside of New Japan. Like it's very much an Akiyama match. And this is why Akiyama is a wrestling god, just because he can make everybody look good, even today still, 15 years later. But like Tenzan, when you think of, Hiroyoshi Tenzan, you don't go, oh man, I love that guy in 30, 40, 50, 60 minute matches. Although he has some under his belt.
Correct, yeah.
You don't think of him as that guy. And here he holds his own. I love Tenzan, but I know, especially with newer New Japan fans, he kind of, differs a little bit just because, of his old age. But it's just a different environment, really, for 2003 New Japan, especially, and there couldn't have been anybody better for this match than Jun Akiyama. I don't even think Misawa or Kobashi, as much as I love them, could have pulled this match off with Tenzan as well as Akiyama did, because Akiyama was willing to give so much more to his opponent than those two. And that's not a knock on those two either, because why would you give anything to your opponent when you're, the two greatest of all time or whatever.
Right.
But I don't know. It makes for such a great environment for the match that I honestly don't think it's been matched in New Japan since.
It's one of those things. Yeah. And obviously people, I think a lot of people are way more aware, obviously, of the G1 now. It's become kind of the quintessential summer thing in kind of the doldrums, yeah, of the wrestling year, because you had WrestleMania in April. You got SummerSlam at the end of August. You have the Survivor Series. You have the Rumble, all that stuff. But you really don't have anything kind of in the middle of that summer, in the bridge between WrestleMania and say, and SummerSlam, and the Dome show is obviously only in January now. And so this has started to become kind of the showcase. And now New Japan, knowing it's a big moneymaker for them, has extended it out to a 20-day tour, which is just absolutely insane.
I think this year's tour, because they took off days, I think it was legitimately like 4 weeks long.
That's just, God, that's insane.
Which is insane.
But you know, this, the one thing about this particular tournament was that it kind of, it seemed more like a sprint as far as this, as the way it was laid out.
Yeah.
And with it not being as big from a participant standpoint, I think there was only 12, I want to say 12 or 14 people in the tournament. So 7 for each block, which is smaller than what the G1 is now. It's interesting to see kind of how everything, you know, shakes out throughout that.
It was 12 men. I had to look it up. 12. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
If it was 12 or 14 either.
And so when it comes down to the final, when you do have that, you know, 12 man tourney essentially, and Tenzon had been the guy kind of squeaking by, but he has that one move that nobody could seem to figure out. That's what I think really added to that atmosphere. Now, the stretch run for this match, it is, I think the one thing I'll say about this, while this is a Noah match, I will say the stretch run is decidedly more New Japan in the way that it kind of has that, not lull, but it has the turning point where both guys basically are like, listen, it's like one of us has to finish this off, or, you know, if we want to win this thing. And then it goes into, you know, I would say more of a Noah style finish, but at the same time, like, it's not really super, super fast. Like, it's not one of those things where they're really trying to kind of build, and then, like, you know, just run through a bunch of finishers. Kind of like, because the modern style New Japan match, it's about kind of like chains of moves one after the other. And that's not really what this match is. They really do a good job of big spot, near fall, reversal, near fall, that type of stuff. Akiyama has a run leading up to the wrist clutch exploder that when Tenzon kicks out, it's like, what the hell just happened? Like, it's, and then that leads to the finish, which is one of my all-time favorite finishes, and something that I'll take to the grave on that too. But I love the last 7-8 minutes of this match, where you do get that kind of that mix, I would say. But it really does kind of remind you that this is the G1 climax, and it took 2 weeks to get here, and this is how it's all going to end.
Yeah, it's definitely, going back to your point, it's definitely, it feels like the finishing run is, it has the parts of a Noah finishing run, a 2003 Noah finishing run, but also the pacing of a New Japan final. They really did a great job of kind of blending the two styles here, because obviously 2003 New Japan, 2003 Noah, much, much different from each other, like as different as two major companies can be from each other. And so they really did a great job of mending that style, especially with Akiyama being, you know, the Noah boy coming in, you know, pretty much just putting New Japan to shame. I mean, just running through everybody in this block outside of Nishimura, and even Nishimura needed, you know, a roll up to win.
Basically a fluke, yeah.
Yeah, like a fluke finish. And so it's such a great match that I can't think of any match ever that blended, especially two differing promotional styles together. Because, like, even if you think about, like, the great matches wrestlers from other promotions have had in other promotions, I guess, like the Dragon Gate six-man in ROH, like, that was a Dragon Gate style match, or like the Impro match in ECW, that was an Impro match. It wasn't like they were blending the styles together like this match. So I think that's something for me that I took away from it that really elevates this match to a whole nother level.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing too, was that the reason why I say the finish is more like a New Japan match is because I think both guys understood that it wasn't just about the fact that, oh, it was a Noah guy against a New Japan guy. It is literally one guy who had patterned his entire career over a decade at that point to one style that he came in and said, "Where this is the better wrestling style." And he was putting it to use in the tournament and doing well with it against another guy who had, you know, trained under Chono. He was his mentor, saw what he did the year before, and wanted to finally step up after almost a decade of being on the cusp, like you talked about, and doing it. And that was what set the grounds for both styles to match up like they did. And that's what's really cool about that, is that it's not just, you know, Tenzan overcoming Akiyama and beating him. It's him showing that the New Japan style is better than the Noah style. And that's like that's a really cool part about that, is that the style that Tenzan decided to take Akiyama down with is the way that he wanted to win the match. He couldn't win the match Akiyama's way. Akiyama, even though he has a really amazing near submission with the King Crab hold, that's an amazing part of that match too. It's like, mm-hmm. He knows that he has to do the way that he had won Noah matches before, which is high impact offense and string moves together until you put the guy away. And at the end, you're still in a New Japan ring, and it's the New Japan guy who knows how to pull it out when it matters the most. And I think that's a really neat little undercurrent to this match.
For sure. Like, it's, I really don't know. Like, I'm not articulate enough really to do it justice. Like, it's such a beautiful match. And like, if you have the opportunity to like watch some of the matches leading up to it, some of Tenzan's matches, some right. of Akiyama matches, especially the two semifinal matches, Akiyama Nagata and Takayama Tenzan, it adds a whole nother layer to this match that you just don't get from the match itself. The match itself, though, in my opinion, probably the best G1 final I've ever seen, which is, you know, a fair number of them.
Yeah.
Because it's just so different. Like, I mean, I understand why people may not like this. Like, yes, it does go long, especially for a Tenzan match. Like, it goes over 30 minutes. And, you know, there's a couple of lulls in it, but I think, especially with the crowd being as hot as they are for this match, like, you don't feel it. It's not like you're sitting there being like, God, I wish they would hurry up and do something. It's just like, it's like the moment, I guess, to like give the crowd a breather, but they don't take it because they're still just going absolutely apeshit for these two guys lying on the ground.
Yeah.
It's just something you don't, I say this a lot on this podcast, but it's really something you don't see nowadays. It's just like, or rarely anyways, like you don't see people like going insane for like collar and elbow tie ups or, you know, like a tease double KO count or whatever. Like, it's just cool to see crowds reacting differently to things that I've been accustomed to seeing how crowds react to.
Yeah. And that the both men down spot in this match is one of the things that I think sticks out to me as much too. And that's where, like, you really, that's when they start to go home. Right. And it's kind of a thing that I think might be overdone in G1s now. And it was kind of a New Japan trope, especially in like Riki Choshu matches and in some Hashimoto matches, but mostly kind of like the go-go-go style of a guy like Choshu or even Muto. But here, like, it's earned. Like, it really is earned. And so when they do go home and they have that great stretch run, it really does kind of seem like it's not just their milk in the crowd. It's like, they really have for 20 minutes put together this incredible run where you have really no idea what's going to happen going forward. And I think that's kind of a rarity nowadays in a lot of ways, the way things are booked. I think the shocks kind of come like at the end of a match, as opposed to like basically knowing, okay, we have it from here. Let's take it home. And, you know, not let the finish be the surprise, but, you know, kind of gradually work into it. And they do that here. The finish of this match is basically, it's a legendary finish for a G1 climax. Essentially, you know, Tenzan is able to get the vice on after a Tenzan tombstone driver. And for the first time, Akiyama is able to stand up out of it. Nobody had done it in the tournament up until then. Not even Takayama. And when that happens, Tenzan just freaking literally takes him by the back of his head, still wrapped up in the hold, and just slams him down on the mat and then wrenches it on until he submits. It's an amazing finish. Like it's, I explained it just now, but like watching it in the moment, like when that, the first time I watched that on tape, I was like freaking pounding my bed in excitement. Like I was just freaking stoked at that finish. It was so earned. Like everything in that tournament up to that moment was so earned. And they really just put an exclamation point on it with that finish.
And it, I mean, it really sets up like Tenzon's whole career. Now the booking of Tenzon, you know, arguably after this.
Yeah.
Oh, kind of, it's something I've thought about after watching this. I'm like, God, why didn't they just go all the way with Tenzon instead of, like, if you don't know the story, essentially when Tenzon wins the belt, he loses it a couple of months later to rising star Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, he does. And
it's weird in the sense that, like, you know, obviously the crowds were loving Tenzon. I don't exactly know how business in New Japan was doing in 03 or 04. I know it was down compared to later years.
Yes, it was.
I'm like, why not let Tenzon have his moment in the sun? Obviously, he would go on later to do other stuff, but it's just one of those weird moments, like, after this literal Cinderella story of a G1, and, you know, he beats another outsider for the freaking title.
Yeah, in a bloody freaking brawl where he overcomes even more in that match than he did in the final against Akiyama.
Yeah, he loses it to Nakamura, who at the time I think had been wrestling for 16 months.
Yeah, it was just about a year, over a year. So yeah,
it was just over a year, because I know on the big show after this G1 final, Nakamura was in his 1 year anniversary match. I know it wasn't much longer than a year,
14 months or so, because November was when he won the title, and then December is when Nakamura upset Tenzon to win the belt before the Dome show. But yeah, like, that's kind of the thing, is like, there's the one of the reasons why this match probably isn't talked about as much as some of the other G1 finals is because of the legacy of Tenzon after this match. It's basically he gets undercut because in typical early 2000s New Japan fashion, where they're just all over the place, they say, hey, let's shock the world and give the young kid the belt, because they really didn't feel they had a future. They didn't feel like Nagata was the guy. They didn't feel Tenzon was the guy. And then by the time Tenzon eventually became the guy, and he had the 60-minute double title match with Kojima, and then they had the Dome match, Tenzon's luster not only had been gone, but his injuries piled up. His knees from the moonsault, his neck injuries. And normally, and this is kind of the thing in retrospect, and I think promoters are getting better at this, is you need to take advantage of a guy when he's hot. Now, maybe not in the WWE, but in general, I feel like the majority of promoters realize if they got somebody, they got to go with them.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the thing, was that, Tenzon wasn't a Muto, he wasn't a Chono, he wasn't a Hash, he wasn't a Choshu, maybe not that level of guy. He wasn't really maybe even a Nagata, but it's like you have to at least let him get an opportunity, you know? And that's what the issue there was that it just didn't turn out to be the right decision-making behind him, sadly. Yep.
And it turns out even Nakamura wasn't the guy.
No, he wasn't. Nakamura was not the guy.
God, early Nakamura is so bad.
Wrestler. He is basically just get to the next spot type of guy at this point in his career. Then when they figured out, none of those guys are the guy, hey, let's lure Brock Lesnar back to wrestling after his football thing goes wrong. That wasn't a good idea either. So,
wow, man.
Yeah.
It's amazing that New Japan is thriving, because they literally did so much stupid shit in the early 2000s.
Literally, folks, you may be a New Japan fan listening to this podcast right now. Like, be like us. Go back and review what happened in the 10 years previous to the boom after Tanahashi got in there. It is not good.
No.
It is very bad professional wrestling. Produces
some good in-ring stuff, but like business and booking-wise, holy shit.
Yeah. No, it is not good. So, but yeah, you know, and this is also, so Tanner, like, did you have to, like, where can folks kind of find this match? Because the one thing is New Japan, you know, has done a pretty good job of consolidating their tape library in some aspects, but Like, where's the best place to kind of see this? Is it on New Japan World at this point or no?
I don't know if this final match is available on New Japan World. Here's the thing. New Japan has hardly any of their G1s outside of, like, the ones when the service actually launched on New Japan.
Which is like, what? Like, which what is, are you doing?
Because they are sitting on some absolute gold. But it's available on YouTube and Daily Motion, this final match is. But also, if you want to kind of go through and look at, like, the stuff leading up to it, like, it's available on Ditch, just like everything. I mean, we all know what it is. It's 2018.
Yeah. Ditch knows what to do, but yeah. But yeah, like, the Nishimura match for sure. Like, if people are looking for other matches from the G1, mm-hmm. Nishimura match for sure. Akiyama Nishimura, absolutely incredible.
Yep.
The Tanahashi Akiyama match, very good. The two semis that we talked about earlier, very good. Those are probably the standouts. Those are like the ones where if you're looking for five or six matches to watch, it doesn't get you there all the way to really understand it. I think being able to get the comm tape or be able to see every match, because I'm sure someone upload all the matches from the comm tape on there, tells you more about it. But yeah, like this was Akiyama basically at the peak of his powers, and this was Tenzan having the best match of his career and the biggest moment of his career, and it turns out to be the right matchup at the right time, and it's definitely going out of your way to see. It really is.
Absolutely. It's definitely the best Tenzan match of all time, like bar none. Probably a top five Akiyama performance ever as well.
Yeah.
Like it's incredible.
Well, good stuff, Tanner. Yeah. I'm glad we I've been actually thinking about this match. When I heard that you were like watching the 2003 G1, there was really only two matches to choose. It was this one or the Nishimura match.
Yes.
But we chose well. And we hope that you guys enjoyed listening to this, and definitely go, you know, search it out. It's worthwhile. The whole tournament, it's actually pretty easy to get through as far as like the block matches. Some of the matches are pretty, you know, non-necessary, but definitely watch the stuff regarding Akiyama and Tenzan for this tournament, because it really does. It tells a great story.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Tanner, where can folks find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Tanner1495. I also co-host another podcast with my friends called All You Can Hear. You can follow us at AYCH Podcast and catch up with us there. And listen to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play Music.
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Tim Livingston. Also follow at PPW Petaluma and check them out on YouTube. And yes, Powerbomb TV, powerbomb.tv. The Scenic City Invitational that happened at the beginning of August. It's up in full. Check out the Futures Tournament that I commentated with Dylan on. Great show. Hour long. Gets through quick. You get to see Marco Stunt the weekend he basically broke out. He became the talk of the entire weekend. And then 2 weeks later, he has the match he had with KTD at Joey Janela's Escape from New York. And now he is perhaps the most popular wrestler on the independent circuit right now. Just insane. In the span of a month. So check it out. Really good stuff. So we'll be back next week with another match here on the Match of the Week podcast. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao.